Well, my guest tonight at the big table is one of Chicago's greatest writers. His column has graced the Chicago Sun-Times sports page for over 22 years. Before that, Rick Tellender was a senior writer at Sports Illustrated. He's worked at ESPN. He's hosted sports radio. And, of course, he was part of the great ensemble that was the sports writers on TV. Tellender wrote the famous book Heaven is a Playground, where he chronicled the stories of playground basketball in Brooklyn, 1974. The book was made into a movie and widely considered one of the best sports books ever written. Rick is a sports columnist. He gives us his opinion, whether we either cheer it on or we throw the paper in the garbage. That's our decision, right? But Tellender has always written about the humanity in sports, what makes the stories connect on and off the field. And that's hard to do. And Tellender, he's won awards doing it. Look no further than his current series in the Sun-Times on violence and basketball at Orr High School on Chicago's West Side. The five-part series can be found at suntimes.com. Rick Tellender is my guest tonight at the big table. Rick, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
I've been a longtime fan of yours. I mean, I feel like your face will always be that face that's in the paper of the Sun-Times. Talk about, you know, let's start with the Orr High School series. This is what you've been working on. What drew you to this story in particular?
You know, it's hard to say. You mentioned Heaven is a Playground, the book that I wrote a long time ago. And, I wondered back then what drew me to that, what to go to an urban setting away from everything that I was familiar with in New York, in Brooklyn. You know, I'm from Peoria, went to Northwestern, played football and everything, then was done. And I wanted to be a writer. I hadn't really told anybody that, but I was trying to think, you know, what drove me to be a writer? What drove me to get into journalism? And I guess it's a whole path of self-discovery is really what it is, because we're all humans. We're all here on this planet. Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand how everybody else functions, those that maybe didn't come from the place you came from, then I don't think you really have a good idea of what's going on in the world. And maybe it was just a kind of innate curiosity, I guess. And then also, having grown up the way I did, you know, I had a great childhood. Everything was great. You know, I had a mom and a dad. We had a, you know, middle-class house. I had a bike, a ball glove. Everything mm-hmm. was good. Great education. Safe. Always safe. You know, I saw some guns when I was a kid. There were shotguns that somebody's going squirrel hunting with, you know, or pheasant hunting. But I've always tried to place myself in somebody else's shoes. What would it be like if that were you? And for that Orr series, we know Chicago, and it's known around the world right now for the violence, the gun violence, which doesn't affect most of us. Let's be honest.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't. There's parts of the city where it's just out of control, and other parts where, you know, it's safe as can be. I don't think it's fair for me to rest in my little cocoon and not know what's going on in the other parts of this city. If this is what the big story is, and this is what the danger is, and this is the reputation of Chicago right now. And you go to Europe, go to South America, go anywhere, Africa, Asia, and they might say, hey, you're from Chicago. Is it safe there?
And there's something special about the idea that it is basketball. High school basketball is sacred in
yes.
Chicago. I mean, there's something that is just magical and mystical about being in a small gym in a Chicago public school as these kids play their hearts out. There's something great. There's something story-like about it.
First of all, I love the game of basketball. I really do. You know, when James Naismith invented it in 1891, it was popular immediately in Springfield, Massachusetts. I mean, men loved it, kids loved it, girls loved it, women loved it, everybody. It's just like, boom. And it's one of the only games that was flat out invented. You know, one day it didn't exist and the next day it did.
Right,
all the
right.
other ones kind of evolved.
They adapted, right.
You know, like we're kicking a head around in some medieval place and it becomes soccer. But I love basketball. And so you're right. When you're in a gym, it's wintertime and you have a small team. Usually it's just a coach, maybe one other coach, you know, an assistant or two. And then you have this team and it's very intense. It was something I could focus on. I was looking at maps, talking with our prep writer, Michael O'Brien.
Yeah, great writer. Yeah.
And also with our great Pulitzer Prize-winning crime reporter, Frank Main. And I said, you know, look, I've written about the South Side. I wrote about Englewood and where Derrick Rose is from, Murray Park. Did a series on that about, I don't know, 5 years ago or so. So the West Side is getting worse than the South Side. I don't know anything about it, really. What about these classic old high schools like Marshall and you know, there's a few others. Farragut is somewhat right. near. But Michael O'Brien said, you know, if you go to Orr, the coach there, Lou Adams, he'll be a great guy. I said, what is it? He said, well, all I can tell you is he's never lied to me. And so I thought, okay, you know, that's a good place to start. And then you look at a map of the violence in Chicago, the shootings and the killings. We had it in the Sun-Times, yeah. And just the map itself is chilling. Just since November, the thing was like just dotted with, it's a Google map, with yellow for shootings and then red for homicides. And Orr's right in the center of it.
It's crazy to think about that. When you show the maps in the piece, I read it on the website. It's amazing to think that there is a high school and there is not only a basketball program at that high school, but a thriving basketball program. I mean, the piece is not just about the coach, which is amazing, the complexity of coaching these kids and trying to be not only just a coach, but also a mentor and a father figure and have to be their person who bails them out of jail. There's so many things that goes into being a coach here, but to talk to the kids too, and the kids who have had tragedy that many of us will never know.
Yeah, it's heartrending, and I didn't try to, I didn't probe too hard when the guy started to back off a little bit, because you can get into very touchy, I don't want to say dangerous area, but very emotionally dangerous and fragile area with these kids very quickly. Like, you got any relatives in jail? You know, of course, a lot of them do. Have you had anybody near to you killed or shot? Yes. You know, but you don't want to continue on with that. And yet, I got close to these guys. I know all of their personalities now from watching them play, seeing them interact. And there's something about, you know, I happen to like teenage boys. I remember so well being one. And the one thing I can say about a teenage boy, nobody wants them around anywhere. They wonder why you play some sports, you win at that, but nobody wants you at the mall. They don't want you hanging out in front of the store. Nobody wants you in their basement. Nobody wants you anywhere where there might be anything illegal, liquor, pot, nothing like that. They just don't really want you around. You're in between being a boy and being a man. And what are you supposed to do? So basketball is this great relief for these kids, it's a treasured thing that they have. And sometimes they lose it. And when they don't have it, there's a street out there, Ferdinand, near Pulaski. And I'd drive through there, through the neighborhood, and there'd be these guys just hanging on the corner. Young guys, you know, any time of day. And I asked Lou Adams, the coach, about it. He said, yeah, I know those guys. I'll drive past there, roll down my window and say, hey, coach, hey, man, you know I'm coming back. I'm coming back. Yeah. But they're not.
They're not.
And that's there. That temptation is there all the time. And I just remember myself, you know, I asked that question when the series started. How would I handle it? Would I make it? Right. I said, would you, putting it out there as a classic, kind of all-purpose pronoun or whatever, would you make it through? This is your situation. This is where you live. This is what people think of you. This is what your neighborhood is like. This is where the gangs are, the drugs, the guns, all this illicit behavior. Do you think you'd make it through? And a lot of people say, well, that's not me. Didn't happen to me. I'm up by the bootstraps. You know, I made it myself. And I just think, okay, I'd like you to trade places with one of these kids and see if you would. And by the end of the series, I concluded, knowing what I knew of myself, and I'm serious about that. I thought about it long and hard, and I just don't think I would have made it.
Rick Tellender, my guest tonight. His series on basketball at Orr High School on Chicago's West Side is up at the suntimes.com, Suntimes website. Rick Tellender, longtime sports columnist here in Chicago. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Rick at the Big Table. Stay with us.
Hey, check out.
My guest in studio at the Big Table tonight on the download, Rick Tellender. Rick Tellender, longtime Suntimes sports columnist, also the author of Heaven is a Playground, considered one of the best books, sports books ever written. Rick is an award-winning journalist, senior. I mean, you've done everything in sports. And the Orr High School series about violence in basketball is up right now at suntimes.com. That's what we're talking about. You know, playground is a big part of your work. Heaven is a Playground. You've talked about the idea of playground basketball and what basketball means to kids. In your piece, and this is tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are talking about they don't go to the playground to play playground basketball. They don't go anymore because of the violence, because of the danger. They stay inside.
Yeah, that's the ultimate irony, tragic irony. Playgrounds are built, constructed for play. And in too many places in Chicago, they become the most dangerous place, a place where you can't play. The parents will say, you know, play right in front of the house on the sidewalk. But no, we're not going to the park. Some of these kids might have to get to a park, for instance, and almost nobody has a car. You know, they just don't. They take public transportation or they walk. They might have a bike. But you might have to go say, a mile or a half mile to the park.
If four blocks.
Yeah, four right. blocks. And you might go through two gang territories. And you're a teenage boy, somebody might just flash a gang sign at you, say, what are you about? And what do you say? What do you say? So they just avoid that because you could possibly, you know, you could get killed. You could be, anything could happen.
I mean, half of the stories about the kids at Orr High School that had run-ins with violence were mistaken identities.
Yeah.
Kids who were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They had anything to do with gangs. They just were accidentally shot because someone sprayed bullets into a crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my one that I mentioned were these two kids who were killed. They were 16 over on the west side. I think it was in December, maybe. And I just brought it up because there's so many twists and permutations to all these shootings and murders and homicides. Bullets don't stop. And this one skipped off the pavement, off the sidewalk, up the stairs, through a wooden door, hit a 65-year-old woman after these two kids were killed, and hit her in the leg. And she bled very heavily, broke a bone, but she lived, you know, but there, she lost a lot of blood. You know, it's that kind of mindlessness of a bullet. So you combine guns. There's so many answers to these things, and so, none of them are absolute, obviously, right. to the problem. But we can just talk about guns. You take the teenage adolescent brain, which is not fully formed. You take it without governance, without someone telling you what to do, without having to be someplace.
Without a father figure saying no.
Exactly.
Right, that's just saying the piece, right?
Yeah, and that's quite often the case. And you're lucky if you got a teacher or a coach or somebody, an uncle, somebody who could take that role. Because I was talking the other night with some of the kids, and you know, a woman can do a lot, but she can't teach you how to be a man. Because, you know, I can't teach my daughters how to be a woman. I can help them be human beings. So with the way that these guns are available, somebody can just get a hot head and they're mad. They got thrown out of a party. They'll go and get a gun and come back and just spray it. And it's like, if you could get them to stop and think, stopping and thinking is not part of the deal. Do you want to spend, you know, your time? Yeah. Do you want to go to prison for 10 years? You know, can you envision that? And there's not that cause and effect element there. And that's what's dangerous to a lot of these kids that stay inside and play video games, one of the only safe places you can be. And we've seen in Chicago a lot of bullets piercing houses.
One of the safe places that used to be, I guess, in the history of Chicago when it comes to violence has been being an athlete. Benji Wilson is the famous story of the kid from Simeon who you're supposed to stay away from student athletes if you were gangs, if you're shooting. In this case, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was shot. He was killed. And that sort of idea, the way the city reacted to that, the idea that the athlete is off limits these days, it's gone.
That's gone. And you're right, the Benji Wilson story, I think it was 1984, right around there, 85. And, you know, Arne Duncan, the former Secretary of Education and also the head of the Chicago schools, we talked about this in this series I wrote, and he said, you know, that was a changing thing because athletes were, you know, you could, if you're marching along, you got your basketball shoes over your shoulder, you're going to the playground.
You had a purpose.
That's right. And you got a free pass. Well, that changed. And, you know, there have been a lot of there was, I think, a 30 for 30 movie on ESPN about Ben Wilson. And they talked to the guy who shot him and killed him. And he was just young. And somebody had told him, whether it was his mom or an uncle, somebody, if you ever take a gun, he took a .22, you never take it unless you're going to use it. And so he felt compelled to this weird, like, little code that he had to shoot Ben Wilson, you know, almost across the street from Simeon. And it was just a .22. You say just a .22, and he shot him, like, in the abdomen. Ben Wilson essentially bled to death. The trauma care was awful. Maybe he probably would have lived nowadays. But the point was, once you get that gun and the ability to do something like that, anything can happen. You can't say it was an accident when you shoot it up in the air, when you shoot it at, you spray a house and it happens to hit a little kid who's inside a house and you're just trying to scare somebody. I mean, if I were 16 and I had a handgun and I was angry and I had no direction, I mean, that's a horrible combination. Horrible, horrible combination.
It's interesting as we go back to the idea of playground. I mean, your book, Heaven is a Playground, and this idea in the series that you just did about the people staying away from the playground. And you add that to the fact that, you know, it's not off limits to be an athlete anymore. You can understand why there has just been a breakdown in other things besides violence or carrying a gun or being in gangs in some of these impoverished neighborhoods.
Yeah, you're right. And we need play. We need to have sports. Sports should be fun and not just for the elite. You know, this Orr team is full of elite players, and they've had many traumas on that team. You know, Danny Smith is having his breakout year this year. He's only a junior. He's 6'5", and he's just been playing terrifically. Every game that I see him play, he seems to be getting better. He's purposely on his own lost a lot of weight. He hadn't played for a couple of years. He went to Lincoln Park, and he's been his self-discipline is incredible. And his two best friends were twins. They all transferred, and those two went to Marshall, and they were good buddies. And those two kids were shot down on Hudson Street over Old Town, near the Old Town area. And Danny said to me, you know, I was going to be with them. And they weren't in a gang. The cops have said they were not in a gang, but they may have been with some guys. You know, you have friends who were in gangs. They're just guys you grew up with. They may be a little loud and boisterous or whatever. You may not even know exactly what beef they have with somebody else. So when you have that kind of thing and people are afraid to play sports, it's just an awful combination. It feeds on itself. Yeah. The grass and a ball and a back, you know, everything. All these sports should be available to everybody, you know?
Rick Tellender is the longtime sports columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times. His book is Heaven is a Playground, which is one of the greatest sports books of all time, back from in the mid-70s. You can find the piece he did on Orr High School and violence in basketball at suntimes.com. We'll take a quick break. We get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Rick Tellender about sports and Chicago here on the Big Table. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Rick Tellender in studio, the longtime Chicago sports columnist at the Sun-Times. Before that, Sports Illustrated. He's been at ESPN. He's hosted sports radio. He was part of the ensemble Sports Writers on TV. I mean, I could go on.
please don't.
He's also the author of the great book, Heaven is a Playground, which is considered one of the best sports books ever written, about playground basketball, 1974 in Brooklyn. Also, his series on basketball and violence at Orr High School is right now up at thesuntimes.com. You've done most of your reporting and most of your writing in the Chicago area. You spent some time in New York, you know, obviously with this book and Heaven is Playground, but Chicago has been your home. What makes this town a great sports town? Or maybe I should ask, is it a great sports town?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. And I don't think that any other place compares with it. We can rule out immediately all the places like, Denver, San Diego, or Seattle. I mean, those are nice and all that, but they exist for some other reason. Chicago is the heartland. It's the middle of the country. A lot of people don't like New York. A lot of people don't like L.A. Everybody in some way has a relative or somebody in Chicago. They like Chicago. That's like when we did the Sports Writers on TV with Bill Gleason and Jousen.
So great.
And Ben Bentley. There we are, the Sports Writers on TV. Young Tellender, I go to you. And the cigar smoke going all over the place.
Still one of the best shows ever done in Chicago.
But people like that because they can say, look at this. Come here, kids. Look at it. This is Chicago. Because it went all over the country on cable. But, yes, it is a great sports town. First of all, we have two baseball teams. So you rule out almost every other city. Boston does not. New York does. L.A., I guess you could call the Angels and the Dodgers. And San Francisco has, the Oakland, it's across the bay.
Right.
But Chicago, you know, they're, 35 blocks to Madison from Wrigley, or 35 to down to the Cell or whatever we call it now. What is it called?
Guaranteed Rate.
Yeah, Guaranteed Rate, sorry. I still call it Comiskey. And 35 to Wrigley, so that's 71 blocks on the L that can get you there. So that's incredible
Do you believe in the idea that the teams take on the spirit and the, I guess, the feel of the town? You know, we always talk about the monsters of the Midway with the Chicago Bears or even the Cubs. Do you feel that's a reality, or is that just a myth that the fans put on the sport that they're watching?
Well, I think they would like to see the teams take on the personality of the city. Can the teams always do that? I mean, look, the Bears fans want a tough defense. They don't necessarily want a run-and-shoot offense where you score 55 points and the other team scores 53, although any win would be nice here, after you go 3-13. But with the Bulls, they want a tough team. They want a very tough team.
Right.
And in baseball, hockey, absolutely. with the Blackhawks. But one thing I've seen in Chicago, and I think this is a fair assessment through all the years, that if a player tries really hard, the fans are knowledgeable and they know that. I remember they used to cheer Will Perdue, not the most graceful guy out on the floor, but he always hustled. And he might dive for a ball going out of bounds and be a big cheer at the United Center. I've seen that a lot of places. And the fans here know when a player is a jerk. They just do. And it's one reason why Jay Cutler's never really been at home here because, you know, God bless Jay. He's doing a lot better. And I think he, you know, he has some like almost like social phobias or whatever,
right,
where he's just not
socially
comfortable.
Awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. And that didn't, you know, people wanted something else from the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. They wanted, a tough guy or something different. So, it's fair in a way, but if you're a coach here, I think you will definitely feel the pressure if you're a general manager.
I mean, how unforgiving is this town? I think of some of the players that do take on, like, the Jay Cutler personas or the coaches that don't last, like the Mark Trestman. I mean, this town can turn quick. I mean, is that normal? I mean, is that something that's shared in Jacksonville or Tennessee or Indianapolis? Or is that something that, in a way, there's a positive that everybody loves sports and this is a great sports town, but if you're on the wrong side of that,
Yeah, you're going to get nailed. You have a lot of rewards if you do well. You know, obviously a lot more than you would if you were in Jacksonville or even Atlanta. I've been down there for Bulls games to the Hawks games, and, you know, the stadium won't be filled. Atlanta almost never is. And yet when Michael Jordan was playing, they played in the Georgia Dome, I believe. They moved in there, and they had something like 50,000 people for a regular season game. So, you know, we had that history of Michael Jordan and the Bulls, the greatest player ever, and one of the most amazing tenures right there. It was like the Beatles going around. I can vouch for that because I was following them around. We had the White Sox win the World Series in 2005. All of a sudden, they just blew through it. They almost had very little drama after the first series against the Red Sox. And then the Cubs last year. I mean, what else do you need to know? This was global news. This wasn't just national.
But it does play into that ethos of what we were just talking about, this like hardworking hustle. We want the team to be tough. All the teams you mentioned that won kind of took on that personality. Even the Cubs this year, young team that wasn't fazed by, I mean, even the lore that we heard about Jason Hayward going into the locker room during the rain delay and yelling at his players. Yeah. I mean, it all fits into this storyline that I don't know. I guess the question I have just as a sports fan, but also as a journalist, is that manufactured? Is that just sort of the fairy dust that we put on to make us continue to want to watch these sports, or is it something real?
I think it's real. Chris Bryant, take Chris Bryant. That smile is real. That kind of modesty is real. He hit a big home run. I mean, he hit so many big clutch ones. But his teammates are trying to throw him out to go and do a tip of the cap and wave to the crowd. He wouldn't do it. You know, it's like, I'm not worthy of that. And he means it. It's not some false modesty. Michael Jordan, they liked his arrogance, but they loved the fact that when the stadium was being closed down, it was 1993, and he had just retired. It was going to be his last game. I can't remember how it went, but he went out and kissed the floor, the Bull, at center court, people remember that stuff. They remember Dennis Rodman playing hard, not being just the complete jerk that he was in San Antonio.
Right.
He was a team and a coach killer down there. He got to Chicago. He was not. And I think the fans here are very, very much aware. If you're a jerk, you look at the Cubs last year, I don't see a jerk on that team. You know, people were worried about Aroldis Chapman coming in. You know, he had a little bit of, was there some domestic violence or whatever going on? We don't know. He was a perfect citizen here. Didn't complain about anything. And you talk about somebody fitting in. Joe Maddon comes from, small town Pennsylvania. He's a little wacky, but we had Phil Jackson, who was, the Zen guru guy. Burning incense, having the players meditate. They'd turn the lights down in the gym and they would go through this stuff. Believe me, he was way ahead of his time. And here's the other beauty of Chicago. It took a guy like Jerry Krause, who nobody really liked, kind of, this guy that always is just sort of odd and socially inappropriate and all, but he picked Phil Jackson. Yeah. As different from him as you could find a person, and yet he recognized the genius of Phil with the team that they were putting together.
It's fascinating to think about. I mean, you get into the psyche of Chicago, coaches like Mike Ditka or Ozzie Guillen or Phil Jackson or Joe
Madden.
Think
of those three guys. Yeah. Those are three in three different sports that are as different and as rare and unusual.
But they're unusual. There's something about it that we gravitate to as Chicago fans. Rick Tellender, my guest in studio, he's got his piece up at the Sun-Times right now on violence in basketball at Orr High School. Of course, the longtime Chicago sports columnist. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the Big Table. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the Big Table tonight, longtime Chicago sports columnist Rick Tellender. He's got a great piece on Orr High School. You got to check it out at suntimes.com. Also, the author of Heaven is a Playground, which is considered one of the best sports books ever written. I mean, it's interesting, you know, what I got to ask the question. I mean, this is one that I feel in the last couple of years, especially when it comes to football, a little bit of basketball. I mean, even see it with we kind of mentioned it with Aroldis Chapman. What takes the joy away from sports, Rick?
Well, obviously, big money makes it difficult. The second thing is teams trying to protect everybody and having very, very circumscribed moments when you can speak to a coach, to a player. If you walk up to a player now at Hallis Hall and you just say, hey, how are you doing? And a PR guy might come up and say, hey, you can't talk now. We used to be able to just, I would grab Ditka whenever I wanted to. I'd grab Jim McMahon, anybody, Eric Kramer, any of these guys. You just grab him in the hallway and say, hey, Eric, you know, now you're not supposed to do that. And I remember talking, It was just the other... couple of years ago, talking to who's a Brandon Marshall, and he was coming off the field, and Brandon always has a big smile and self promoter and all that. And I said, "Hey, Brandon, and he said, "Hey, I talk on Wednesdays." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, you know, that's cool." So that gets in the way. I don't like that stuff. They always say you should not see how the sausage is made. And see, I love sausage. I love hot dogs. Everybody says, not ever go to
a
slaughterhouse.
Yeah, right.
And I said, I still like it. I don't care. They sweep it up off the floor. But anyway, when you do that, when you find out how everything works and you find the, how venal people can be and how it's all about money and how coaches lie to players and things like that, you don't want to see that. But you'll find that in any business. And the one thing I have found that has sustained me through the years is that the athletes are the same. They really are. And I'll go way back to when Joe Namath was playing and, Steve Carlton, he was a jerk. He was a raging jerk. And that was back in, the early 70s. You know, they didn't invent jerks nowadays. there were some really bad guys. Albert Bell, I tried to talk to him one time in a dugout before a World Series game, and he started to walk towards me silently holding a bat in his hand, very slowly, like out of a movie, like some monster movie. And it was just bizarre. But in general, the players love the game. They happen to be incredibly skilled. That's one thing that people forget. They ask George Brett, you must really practice hitting the ball all the time. He said, hell, I could always hit a baseball. Always.
Probably to this day, that's the thing,
okay? Well, some guys can just do that. But then the rest of the part of them, they're normal people with normal flaws, huge flaws. Quite often they're not well adjusted. And I find I really like doing stories on amateurs, on high school kids, because they're right there. They're raw,
Everything's in front of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because we've seen with the politics, we've seen with the Trump administration and the mainstream media kind of get at each other. You've seen the Trump say that the media is the enemy of the people. And every time I hear that, I go, oh, this reminds me of sports. It reminds me of what sports media has gone through with the players and with the coaches and with the organizations. I mean, there has been a breakdown in the communication between the media, which is the mouthpiece for the fans and the organizations. And this town is not immune to that. We've seen many times where coaches and others have gone off on the media not getting stories right, or the media is being the enemy of the sport.
Yeah, and I will salute Joe Madden for not being like that. Joe is like, when I first press conference that I was at, and I said, it was after a game, and I said, Joe, this is a kind of a weird question. That's how I prefaced it. And he stopped and said, hey, cool, man. I love weird questions. It's like, all right, yes, this is going to be great. And he's been terrific. He obviously he hasn't had a lot to complain about, although now people are blaming him for the way it went, you know, using Chapman too much. And even though they won the seventh game, he, you know, it was bad managing that got it even close. So, but he hasn't reacted to that. I think what we're seeing in big sports is the TV revenue just keeps going up and up, and the people that run the product want to control it, as anybody does. You want to control everything around
it. Right, absolutely.
And as you can control more and more, you will do that. And you do that by pulling in the, you know, kind of the fence that where the media is kind of chirping away at. And players now have the ability, for instance, and we know our great president does, to tweet, which theoretically you can reach everybody all the time. You don't need the newspapers or radios. You can do a blog if you wish. You can do anything.
Right.
Derek Jeter started his a little a very interesting thing. It's for athletes only. It's called, I don't know, the Athlete Journal or something like that. And any athlete, any pro athlete can write for that, and it will be put online, and they can write their own essays. Been some pretty good stuff there. You know, but what they're trying to do is control the message, which everybody wants to do. That's why we have marketing and PR firms. You want to control the message. It's about advertising, what have you. But, you know, while I was waiting here, when you were on air earlier, I was out in the atrium there, and all those, there's those chiseled
all the
things.
Quotes and things, yeah.
Amazing, that atrium, where you see these great words about freedom of the press from some great Americans. And going back even to Britain, and they talk about the value of a free press. The free press is not your enemy, not anybody's enemy. When we have tyranny, when we have bad things happen, it's because there isn't a free press. And mistakes, yes, everybody's going to make a mistake. You better apologize when you make one. But it's not like you're doing it on purpose. And when Donald Trump went on his rant about libel, I'm going to change the libel laws, he doesn't realize that he's so protected. He can sue anybody he wants to. Now, he might not win. It has to be reckless disregard for the truth. You have to know you're wrong. You know, and some people do that. And in fact, I could argue that what he just said about Barack Obama is libel. And
well, I was going to say, I mean, in your profession as a columnist, I mean, part of the fun of it is that sometimes you are wrong.
Yes.
I mean, that you say, we're not going to win the World Series this year.
Yeah,
okay,
well,
we
I haven't said that. I mean, every year my hard shell got built up. You know, it's been 90 years. It's been 95. It's been 100. It's been 108. We're never going to win. And Theo Epstein, God bless his soul, has been very, very nice to all of us about that. He's not come up and said, see, you
see,
jerks.
I told you so.
Yeah,
right.
you low-life scum who doubted the plan. But, you know, the whole idea of the free press and being able to say what you want to say and occasionally be wrong, to have an opinion. Because obviously when I'm in the sports field, I don't generally almost never ask for somebody to be fired. I don't think I've ever... I don't know if I've asked for somebody said. I basically said that Jay Cutler shouldn't come back as a quarterback for the Bears, just it's time for a change. But I'm not going to say fire this guy, fire that guy. I think what I write becomes obvious because you are dealing with these people's livelihoods a lot of times.
For you, as we wrap here, I mean, to think back to your childhood, you talked about it at the beginning, growing up in Peoria, to playing football at Northwestern. Do you, I mean, as you think about your career and how it's played out as a writer, and you think back to the ambitions you had or the dreams you had to be an athlete, do you feel like you've accomplished that by being in the sport, being in the sport arena? Or do you feel like, man, I wish I wasn't a writer. I wish I was a player.
No, I got over that. You know, that's a fascinating, I think, to look back in your childhood. I remember being like 5 years old really well. My childhood is burnished in my brain. And I was, the title of my autobiography is going to be Hungry. I was always hungry. I was starving. I would eat any kid's house. I'd go and eat food. But all we did was play. We played. And if you stayed in the house, your mom said, you better get out of here. You guys better go do something because I got plenty for you to do in the house. And kids all over, we'd get on our bikes. We'd play sports all day long. I think my other real goal was I fell in love with the English language, with the printed word. It was a true love affair. It still is to this day. And it's a mistress, if you will, that I can never fully possess. But it's a palette of words. I think English language has more words than any other language. I believe that's true. I know there have been some great writers like Joseph Conrad and others who've changed from their native language to write in English because it's so fertile. Nabokov. And so I wanted to use that to express myself. And I figured what better way than to write about sports, which I love, and the people in it. Because it's only the people The games are obvious. You watch those. Those are great. But it's the people that fascinate me.
Rick Tellender, always fascinating us. Chicagoans, longtime sports columnist for the Sun-Times. Also the author of Heaven is a Playground, which looked at playground basketball in Brooklyn, 1974. He's got a great, unbelievable series that you have to check out at suntimes.com about Orr High School basketball and violence. Orr still in the high school basketball tournament right now.
Yeah, they're going downstate. They won the Super Sectional in Joliet last night, and there are four teams now down in Peoria that will be playing on Friday and Saturday.
Rick, I can't thank you enough. Thanks for being my guest.
Thanks, Justin.